the war is defining their future right now. They're not going to back down with the case of the economy. They know they have been suffering for such a long time, for more than 46 years of sanctions. So this, the understanding on their part right now is, if we cannot, you know, outlast the United States right now, they're going to destroy everything in our country. Carl, we had a website being announced in Iran. Those people who want to sacrifice their life to defend Iran. That website, in a matter of 4 days, more than 20 million people, they registered themselves in that website to sacrifice. They're prepared to sacrifice their life in defending Iran. This is people and the government and the political parties in Iran are totally unified against the United States and what's going on in the Middle East. That's why I would say Iranian government has never been in such a strong position as they experience these days. They have the full support of the Iranian people right now. All the political parties, from the left, from the right, from the center, they are unified in their position. The leadership, the new leadership, is just so connected with all these people in the government, and they know what they want by this, because, Colonel, the war is not something small to be ignored. When you're attacked, when more than 3,000 people were killed during this war, mostly civilians, when your infrastructure got hit by American fighter jets, by Israeli fighter jets, they destroyed pharmaceutical plants in Iran, schools, hospitals, bridges. These are not some small issues to be ignored. These are the existence of a country. If they don't want this happening anymore, that's why they're ready to sacrifice everything to get out of this war victorious. Victorious is doesn't mean that the Iran is going to attack anybody, but Iran is going to defeat the United States in its objectives in Iran. They wanted to do regime change in Iran. They failed.
He seems to imply here that if we don't break the blockade, that Iran will initiate direct action. So what do you think he means by that?
He literally means that if the blockade continues, we have to confront the United States. It doesn't matter if there is some sort of ceasefire by Israeli characteristics in the region, and we're going to fight back.
Do you have a sense for how much patience would Iran have, given the genuine problems that the blockade is causing for the people of Iran? How long might they go? A week? 6 months? I mean, what would be your guess? I know you don't. I'm not in the decision making, but what is your guess?
Yeah, I think part of that is the problems that they're making for the Iranian economy. But the huge chunk of what he's talking about, it's about the Iranian dignity. It means that a country like Iran, which is a very important country in the West Asia, cannot let the United States to humiliate it in the Persian Gulf by this blockade. That's why anytime some sort of war can happen between Iran and the United States, the two sides are, in the last 4 or 5 days, they're firing at each other.
Yeah,
we know that there is no ceasefire, Colonel, when it comes to the reality of the Persian Gulf. But the CISO, this fighting, this firing at each other, going to escalate as time goes by. And that's the issue that Mohsen Rezaei was talking about, that it's going to go little by little, but finally we're going to get to a full war between Iran and the United States, considering the blockade, considering what the United States is trying to do to humiliate Iranian government. They managed to do this communication, these trades, by using Pakistan, using the Caspian Sea, using other means. And we know that the blockade was somehow effective for 10%, 15% of the Iranian trade through the Strait of Hormuz. But the main point is that our dignity is on the table right now. We have to fight back because of our dignity. It's not about the pressure and the economic pressure on Iranian economy.
Now, there was some comments from the Iranian side shortly after the ceasefire that we're currently semi in went into effect. Is that, hey, if with the ceasefire is broken and we go back to full on war, because there was a lot of threats from the United States and Israel at that point, that we have new weapons that we haven't used yet. Now, there has been here in just the last week or so, I've seen some X accounts that claim that China has given potentially anti-ship cruise missiles and the radars and the things that go along with them that could potentially allow Iran to cause severe damage to our naval fleet in the region. Do you have any information on that?
Carl, somehow what has happened during the war and since the ceasefire was announced, Iran has improved the air defense system tremendously. They have a new air defense system right now. They call it Arash the Archer. And it seems that I have heard some sort of rumors in Iran that even Russia wants to buy this air defense system because of what's going on in this continuous war between Russia and Ukraine. We had the Iranian air defense system. We've seen the pictures of Iranian air defense system called Mejid in Armenia. Armenia is using the Iranian air defense system. And so what they have during this war since last year, in June 2025, and then the second round in February 28 this year, the Iranian army, the Iranian IRGC altogether, this experience contributed hugely to improve the air defense system, their understanding of a new sort of war, because the United States is basically attacking Iran by using air force and the Navy. So the air defense system has grown a lot and they have improved it because of the integration. It doesn't, it means that they have those weapons, but you have to integrate those weapons in a system. They have created that system. That's why you see in the final days of the war before the ceasefire, we had Iranian capabilities in terms of their, the way that the air defense system was working was better, was improved tremendously. And that was hugely improved in the aftermath of, since the ceasefire started. That's what I'm hearing from Iranian side. And I have no reason to doubt that, because the people who are talking this way, these aren't people who are, part of the media who wants to manipulate the Persian media, because this is not the way that Iran works. Basically, the same way that we've been witnessing in Russia. They're not bragging about anything. If they have it, they say we have it. If they don't have it, they don't talk about it. So I have no reason to doubt what they're talking about.
So then the real question is going to be what happens next? So who knows what President Trump may end up saying here. I'm sorry, I just got a note from somebody who has some knowledge of this. Let me see. Interesting. Yeah, so somebody who has some claims and knowledge about what's going on in this meeting right now says that apparently the pressure on Trump not to escalate to military operations is high, and apparently more pressure on him to concede to some things for Iran might be gaining a trend tension so far. Let's hope that turns out to be right. Let me just ask you this question though: what would Iran need in one or two points to say let's keep negotiations going, let's keep diplomacy going, and not go back? What do they have to have from the U.S. at a minimum to say, all right, there's room for us to work now?
At a minimum, the United States has to agree what Iran has defined so far for the Strait of Hormuz, the first point. The second point, let me put the first point would be Lebanon. The first point is Lebanon. The second point is the Strait of Hormuz. And the third point would be the release of the Iranian frozen assets, $12 billion. Which is half of the frozen assets so far to be released. These are the important points right now, in my opinion, on the part of Iranians. When it comes to nuclear program, I don't see Iran having any sort of problem declaring that they're not seeking nuclear weapons. They're prepared for that. They've been prepared for that even before this war started. And I think before achieving these objectives, we're not going to get to the second step, which would be the Iranian nuclear program and what would be the future of Iranian nuclear program or the enriched uranium that Iran has in 400 kilograms of enriched uranium. And we're not going to hear anything of that sort about the nuclear program of Iran before achieving these three steps: Lebanon, the Strait of Hormuz, and the Iranian frozen assets.
Right. Yeah. So that kind of matches some of the things some of you, the leaders of Iran, have been saying here, especially about Iran. This is the foreign ministry spokesman was complaining about this. I think this was early. Yeah, this is earlier today, our time. He said that the condemned the Israeli airstrikes targeting southern and eastern Lebanon, declaring that U.S. is an accomplice in all the atrocities. So keeping front and center from the official government level that the Lebanon issue is up front there. It's boy, that would be one of the biggest, hardest asks. That may be the hardest ask, even more than the cash, because that means that President Trump has to give a genuine, no kidding, full stop order to Netanyahu, and then they have to apply by it. It's hard to see that happening, though.
It's Carl, I think for many people, when it comes to Lebanon, should understand why Iran is insisting on the case of Lebanon. Lebanon, for those people who are not familiar with the acts of resistance, is the heart of the acts of resistance. Lebanon is everything to the acts of resistance. When Israelis started attacking Gaza and the West Bank, it was Lebanon coming up and fighting back and saying Israel should do something, should back down, or they're gonna hit all these settlers in the northern part of Israel, as they call it. That's why they attacked the northern part of Israel. They tried to put pressure on Israeli government, and because of the people in Palestine. They have no other means. And that's why Iran is not going to back down. There is no way for Iran to back down on this case of Lebanon. And even you look at today and what has happened to Lebanon in the aftermath of the assassination of Seyed Hassan Nasrallah, which they thought that with those assassinations, they're going to diminish Hezbollah in a way that they're not going to get back anytime soon to the same position, to the same situation they had before the assassination. That wasn't the case, because the resistance is something that is in their DNA, because they're fighting because of the occupation. They're not fighting because they decided because they're so happy with what's going on in Lebanon. No, they have no other option but fighting back. You have to. When some other countries come to your country to grab the land of your country, to annex that to Israel, there is no way to back down on these policies. They have to fight back. And Iran is not going to back down on supporting Lebanon.
Let me ask you something, because that highlights something. Let me pull back a little bit here. Because we'll just start with the assassination of Soleimani in 2020. I know we could go a lot further, but we'll just keep it there. From that time up through maybe the destruction of the Iranian embassy in Syria that was destroyed there by the Israelis, most of the reaction was relatively muted by the Iranian side. It seemed like they were always looking to how can we bring this back into some sort of level of stability and stuff. It seems to me that maybe with Operation Midnight Hammer, but definitely with this one, that there has been a fundamental, maybe a sea change in the view of the Iranian side, that nothing, they will never go back to that again. Can you kind of tell me what change that has made and what, therefore, can we expect going forward with Iran in the region?
The assassination of Qasem Soleimani, General Qasem Soleimani, was so much. It had deep, deep influence on Iranian society, because he wasn't some, ordinary guy or ordinary general. He was so much important within the Iranian society and outside of Iran. And the way that Donald Trump assassinated him, he was on a diplomatic visit to Iraq. He was trying to help, by the way. He was somehow cooperating and helping the region to bring some sort of sanity, to put an end to the wars. We had the ISIS. We had all those complexities in those days. He did everything, Carl. to defeat Daesh, to defeat ISIS. Many people call it ISIS in the Western media, but in Iran, they call it Daesh. And he's done what, because when it comes to the defeat of the ISIS, many people are arguing it was Russia, the United States. Russia helped a lot using their fighter jets. But what was done on the battlefield, on the ground, which was mostly the most important part of that mission, was underground by Qasem Soleimani. He defeated Daesh in the region. And he, when the Kurdish people in the northern part of Iran, in the Iraqi Kurdistan, they were, you know, Daesh was attacking them, and they had nobody to defend them. They called the United States to defend them. The United States said it takes time to go there and to defend you. They called Soleimani and said, we need it, and we need it immediately. We need you immediately here. And he sent immediately the forces there to fight Daesh and ISIS. You know, this is the importance of General Soleimani for the whole region. That's why it wasn't a loss of Iranian people. It was a loss for the whole region. Many people are arguing he was making the life difficult for American soldiers. But the whole mission, what he had in his mind, was that we have to get rid of Israeli agenda in the region. He saw ISIS as a part of that agenda. It's because the chaos in the Middle East as an outcome of the ISIS, of those people who were murdering people in Syria, in Iraq, in the whole region, they were destroying everything. You remember those days.
Oh, yeah.
And we all together, the United States, Iran, Russia, they all together defeated ISIS after that sort of war. But after all, you see Donald Trump coming back and assassinating the very same guy who defeated Daesh on the ground. That was devastating for Iranians. And they don't understand. That's why they don't believe in whatever Donald Trump is trying to put out. They don't trust the Trump administration. They don't trust what Donald Trump is talking about. Their basic, you know, reference when it comes to what's going on in the mindset of the people in the West is coming from Israel. Israel is telling us what is the agenda. Israel is telling us what would be the next step, not the Trump administration or not Donald Trump himself. And the outcome, to be honest, is showing that to us.
And
how
so
many
where,
times
where
Donald Trump
now?
Told us it's gonna the war gonna be over in the next 24 hours? The war gonna be. He was repeating and repeating the same sort of rhetoric. That's why nobody trusts Donald Trump in Iran.
Yeah, I actually just did a show on that this morning on that very topic, and I mentioned a lot of those things and all the things that were said and what didn't happen afterwards. But where is Iran now? What can we expect from Iran in the next 10, 20 years in terms of their engagement in the region?
What is Iran? What is happening with the case of the Strait of Hormuz? I think the whole point of the Strait of Hormuz in on the part of Iranians, many people are arguing that Iran is going to be $2 million per tankers, but that's a marginal sort of point for Iranians. What they see in the Strait of Hormuz as a center to bring all these countries in the region together, to have some sort of understanding. If the GCC countries are dependent on Iran, they have to understand that the American bases are not going to get back the way it was before this war started. The whole point with those bases was to be used against Iran. If they want to be the neighbors of Iran, the reliable neighbors of Iran, or have some sort of cooperation, mutual understanding, peace and prosperity for the region, they have to understand that we have to have some sort of security architecture. I don't know how is that going to be defined. I don't know, because Pakistani government, it seems to me that they're playing a very important role as time goes by. They're communicating with Americans, they're communicating with the Iranians, they're communicating with Chinese, and we know that they have some sort of military agreement with Saudi Arabia. So is that going to bring some sort of change to the Middle East? Is that going to help the whole region to have some sort of understanding? If Iran is attacked, you're not going to be in a better position, Saudi Arabia. Qatar, you're not going to be better off by attacking Iran. So if that's the general understanding of the region, nobody would facilitate, would help the United States or Israel to attack Iran. That's the whole point. Iran doesn't want. If the United States wants to attack Iran, they can attack Iran from Israel or from some other points, but they cannot use GCC countries against Iran. If that happens again, Iran gonna destroy everything in these countries. I think the communication right now between the government in Iran and GCC countries is the whole point is this. You're gonna have, if you don't trust us, if you see some sort of threat coming from Iran, show us what is the origin of that threat. Where did we attack you before this war happening? If that's not the case, you cannot be used against us. If they use you to attack us, we're going to attack you. We're going to destroy everything in your countries. And that's and the initial point would be the Strait of Hormuz. We're going to do again. We're going to close the Strait of Hormuz. Huge pain on your economy, and we're going to destroy your infrastructure the way that the United States and Israel tried to do to Iran.
But if they don't go to war against Iran, then none of those things happen. Nothing.
It's going to be a prosperous and peaceful region for all the countries in that region.
Well, I'm all about anything that ends the war and brings prosperity to a lot of people, and we need this one to come to an end. In the last few minutes we have here, I'm gonna ask Gary to come and join us here. He's got some interesting comments, because there is one more thing that we want to discuss here, and that's in the news. This is according to the New York Times. At least that's where it first came out, is apparently Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff said, hey, how's about we have this special bill? Apparently, this is what President Trump is suggesting, a $300 billion reconstruction program in Tehran, overseen by and enriching the pockets of them. What do you say to that?
Danny, the sheer genius of Trump finally is coming to the surface. We've been waiting, right? When's he going to pull out his Trump card? Here it is. Beautiful, exactly the beautiful, you know, he's building the ballroom, the most beautiful in the world. You know what he's planning on doing in Gaza? He's going to take that same formula, bring it right over into Iran. And the two geniuses behind that, Kushner, they'll pull it off, Danny. They're going to use the same contractors and go in and just build in Iran just the way they plan on building in Gaza. It's a perfect formula.
I mean, what could go wrong, right? Exactly. I mean, I'm sure that would be embraced with open arms. Don't you agree?
No, that's not going to happen. Yeah, it could have been before this war started, because
that's what I want you to talk about. We're laughing and mocking about it now, but you say before the war that might not have been such a crazy idea. Could you explain?
Yeah, before this war happening, there were people in Iran who some sort of cooperation between Iran and the United States. The United States could investigate, could invest in Iranian economy and somehow in the energy facilities and energy sector of Iran. But what Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff are talking about, the reconstruction of infrastructures in Iran, Iran doesn't need that. I don't see but when it comes to the energy, that was the mindset before this war happening. I think right now, nobody believes that they can reach any sort of meaningful agreement between Iran and the United States, that the outcome would be such cooperation between the two sides. It's some wishful thinking, in my opinion.
I'd like your view on this, because when I saw that headline, my jaw dropped, because I thought, hang on, these are the same two guys that went to negotiate this war and had claimed we were looking for an outcome, and then all of a sudden pull the rug out from under them. Why, on what planet can those same two guys financially benefit in the aftermath? And yet apparently Trump actually thought that.
There is no way they let Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner to go to Iran to invest in anything. It's impossible for them. Because they recognize these two guys as Israeli agents. And they don't want anything to do with Israel. Anything to do with Israel. That's literally the position of the Iranian government, the Iranian leadership. And that's why I think that is wishful thinking on their part.
Well, that seems to be a lot of wishful thinking here. Last question. You said something earlier in this, and I just kind of like you to, I don't know if you clarify or expound on it a little bit, but you said one of the things that because of the Jonathan Pollard statements that Iran may at some point say we're going to withdraw from the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the NPT, that would carry some pretty profound implications because that would almost make certainly everybody in the West would say, then you're going to race to the bomb. How might that come to pass? And do you think that they would take that step?
I think it depends on the situation right now between Iran and the United States and the whole region, the way that Israel is, you know, is trying to escalate the situation. Let's assume if the United States tries to do something by negotiating, by sending messages to Iran in these messages back and forth, if they could reach some sort of, I would say, ceasefire, permanent ceasefire. I don't call it an agreement or a deal. It's going to be some sort of permanent ceasefire. What does that mean? It means that the United States is not going to attack Iran. If they attack Iran, they're going to see the way it was yesterday. Like yesterday, Iran attacked the American base in Kuwait. That was a sign for the United States. If they do that, Iran can attack these countries again and again. So what else can be done, in my opinion, how Iran can decide or change its mind toward nuclear program if they want to produce weapons? It all depends on the escalations. If they feel, I would say right now, they don't feel that they need nuclear weapons right now. They don't need that. They need to get out of NPT because they don't see this as an existential threat to Iran because they could defeat Israel and the United States conventionally, you know, by conventional war, while using these conventional weapons. That's why they don't need the nuclear weapons. If they feel Israel is trying to do something against Iran with the use of nuclear weapons, not even using them, if the intelligence and the government comes to some sort of understanding that they're preparing for such an attack, they're going to do it as soon as possible. And they're going to announce it. They're not going to do it behind the scene No, they're going to announce that we're going to get out of NPT and we're going to produce nuclear weapons. It's not going to be something behind the scene without announcing it, yeah. In my opinion.
Well, let's certainly hope we don't get to that point. I just checked back with my source here a second ago, and apparently the range of options in the situation room right now with President Trump is either seeing if he can come up with the plausible path to give enough things to the Iranian side to where they could live with it and move into kind of like you talked about to a quasi ceasefire, not a deal, but just we're not going to fight for a while. And if he can't, he'll just kick the can down the road and just keep the blockades in place. So my last question to you is, if that's the outcome, and I would say that's the most likely outcome, because I can't imagine politically Trump agreeing to anything that the Iranian side said they need, especially their non-negotiables up front. How long will Iran wait before they do something like this and try to force the thing open on their own?
It depends on what would happen. It's so fluid, Colonel, the situation in the Persian Gulf. It may happen tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, in 1 week, or in 1 month. It depends on what's going on in that. Because if, let's assume, if they try to hit Iranian tankers, vessels. So what would be the reaction on the part of Iran and how far they would go? You know, on the battlefield, everything is unpredictable, in my opinion. We can have it as soon as tomorrow, as soon as next week. And it's so fluid, the situation. That's why I think, but what is certain, in my opinion, is that this going to be, the blockade going to be the escalation. It means escalation. It means escalation to a full war between Iran and the United States. And that's going to be, we're getting back to the same sort of situation we had during the war. That's going to be the escalation. The two sides, one side attacking infrastructure, the other side would be, you know, they were hitting some infrastructures in Iran. Iran hitting four of them in other countries. You know, this is the sort of mindset right now in Iran. And they feel that they don't need to escalate. because they have the dominance in the region. They don't need to attack anybody. But if the United States attacks them, they can respond in a proper manner. That's the understanding on their part right now.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens. Presumably, President Trump is going to make some kind of announcement this afternoon. And we'll be covering that either here on the channel or on
It's not going to change. Sorry for interrupting you. Let's assume that Donald Trump announcing that, we reached some sort of deal or agreement. That's not going to change the reality, Colonel. That's the war is going on and on as long as Israel is attacking Lebanon.
Fine. Yeah, that seems to be the central fulcrum about everything. And as long as that's going on, the rest of it is just background noise. Well, we'll see what happens, and we'll see if President Trump ever gives in to that. Just a reminder to everybody, go to Dialogue Works to see more of Nima, where he's got some great stuff. I've pulled some stuff off of there on our show that we've used here before, because there's always some great interviews there and great points. Thank you so much for being on today, Nima. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Great pleasure, Colonel.
And we'll see you guys on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. You know, we don't have sponsors because we hate to hit you over the head with ads. I don't like them. So show a little love back. Subscribe, like, and send this to somebody you care about.